This series deals with themes of loss of life, grief, trauma, violence, and mental health. The content may not be suitable for younger listeners.
Kia ora, I'm Mitchell Alexander.
And I'm Alex Mason. Welcome to Season 2 of Unclassified, a series where we bring you first-hand tales about extraordinary moments in the lives of members of the New Zealand Defence Force. Today, we're joined by Chief Petty Officer Leon Riley to talk about his experience of leading a crew through a hair-raising rescue at sea in the midst of a tropical cyclone.
I already had people on board that I was looking after, so I feel like the rescue has already started when I left, because I already had the people and I put them into that environment. So I was like, I'm already rescuing my own crew, like, you know, trying to get ourselves back. But then going and grabbing him and then coming back, it still felt like the whole thing was a pretty hairy moment.
Chief Petty Officer Leon Riley is a seaman combat specialist who hails from Rotorua. In 2006, at the age of 17, he enlisted in the Royal New Zealand Navy, and in 2014, he was named Sailor of the Year. Leon took a three-year break from life at sea, but he was enticed back to the Navy ranks in 2021 after receiving a phone call asking if he would like to come back.
In February 2023, as Cyclone Gabrielle bore down on the North Island of New Zealand, the naval frigate HMNZS Tamana was called on to help with a search and rescue mission east of Great Barrier Island. A solo yachtsman had been unable to beach his boat after the mooring snapped. The police had tried to reach him, but the sea was too rough for their vessel. The conditions were also too wild for the Northland Rescue Helicopter to use their rescue winch. So it was up to the Navy. Four personnel in a rigid hull inflatable boat, known as a rib, braved the treacherous conditions with Leon at the helm. Thanks for joining us today, Leon. Can you talk us through what happened when you got the call up to head out into the elements and try and rescue this boatie? How did that moment play out?
Pretty much what happened was we're all at work on ship. The working day had finished. We all left to go home to our families. Then we got a call up to come back to the ship. And then so we all headed back to ship and then, yeah, headed off to sea to go try find where this vessel was.
What was going through your mind at that stage when you heard what you were being asked to do?
For myself, it's just like we're going to go potentially help someone. So I think everyone gets on board and like, okay, let's go do this sort of thing. Gets a bit of adrenaline pumping for everyone. But yeah, so pretty much just headed up overnight and try to find out where he was. And then the next morning, we started seeing the mast of the vessel come up over the horizon. So then the captain of the ship, our commanding officer, called up the Northland Rescue Helicopter, gave the coordinates of where the vessel was. And then at this point, I was up on the bridge watching because as coxswains of the ribs, we know that at those sort of conditions, the boat most likely won't get launched. So we went for a watch out of the bridge. But then whilst we're up there, the captain was on the phone to the helicopter when they came out. And then they were talking and then they said they couldn't conduct a rescue. So then they asked if we could launch our rib. At that point, the captain looked at me and then pretty much gave me the eye contact of like, are you going to say yes sort of thing? So I was just like, oh, gave him the nod and yeah, give it a go sort of thing. But yeah, so then from there, pretty much all hands on, made the pipes over the main broadcast and we all got down in the boat and headed off.
When the captain gave you that nod, what was going through your head?
I know, just the task at hand. Not to sound cocky or anything, but like it was a bit of like, whoa, like these conditions are rough. I'm going to be doing it sort of thing. Like, so it's just like, and then the potential of saving someone as well is like, give you more drive to do it. But yeah, that's sort of my mentality on it.
And when you got out on the rib, could you just sort of explain who was with you at the time and what part each and every one of you played?
On a frigate, HMNZS Tamana, where the ribs are located on the ship, it's quite high up from the ocean. But with the waves as big as they were, when we hopped up into the cradle, me and my crew, we were getting hit by the waves coming over the front of the ship. So it was like you're standing there, not even in the water yet, and you're feeling the water go like into your face, and you're like, oh, okay, great. Like, we're already soaked. Yeah, so pretty much we got in there. It was myself, one of our able rates, same branch as myself, Seaman Combat Specialist, and then we also had two divers in the boat with us as well. The reason we had the divers in there was mainly to actually hop into the water. They needed to get across to the vessel and get in or whatever and help the person out.
You've mentioned that these were some rough conditions. Can you describe how big the waves were? What are we talking about?
So I think it was probably roughly 3 to 4 meter of significant swell, but also it was sort of hard to describe. Like, for myself, I thought it was like a washing machine. Like, it was just waves were coming from weird directions, which is, the sea's always unpredictable, but to see barrels of waves in the middle of the ocean, I've never seen that before. So that was pretty interesting.
How big was the rib that you're in?
7.2 meters, I think. So, yeah.
So what does it feel like physically to be in a boat that size, in a swell that size, and being tossed around like that?
So pretty much when I left the ship, we got craned down. And then, because I have had some sort of rough weather and stuff at nighttime and stuff like that. So when I did leave the ship, I was like, oh, okay, I can deal with this. And then once the ship went away and then I had no shelter from the ship, then that's when I was like, whoa, like, okay, now this is serious, just with the wind conditions as well. So I think it was like 40 to 60 knot winds. So the sea spray coming off the top of the waves was pretty much like you couldn't breathe. And like you're just like trying to hide away and then trying to drive and make your way there. But for the size of the waves, it was like driving through, like when you're driving through the troughs, like in between the waves, because I had to find spots where I could get up over that section of wave rolling through. There was times where I couldn't see the ship. So then I was using the helicopter to sort of guide me and try navigate my way through mountains of water, both sides, and then just try make my way through.
This is the yacht that you were unable to see.
And the ship.
And Tamana.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And that's a big vessel.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. So it was just like, you're just, all you see is walls of water and then just sea spray. And then you're just, I was just using the helicopter to, because I knew that they'll hover around the yacht. So then I just made my way, trying to navigate through the waves and over the troughs and through to get as close as I could, really.
Was that scary? Did you ever feel any hesitation at any point?
I think in the moment, you're just trying to do what you can do. So I knew that I had my crew in the boat as well. So I think we're having that responsibility in the boat, because as a driver, you're responsible for their lives as well. So then that puts a bit of pressure on, but I think I sort of used that as drive to, like, I need to make sure we could all get back safely. But yeah, so we just made our way over to the yacht.
Had you trained in these sorts of conditions to prepare you for a scenario like this?
No. But I have had lots of experiences for my trade in the Navy. That's our job, is to drive the ribs as well, amongst other things as well. But yeah, so as coming up through the ranks, I've always been in the boat driving different ones in just nighttime, whatever. I think it's just the experiences that you have gives you the knowledge, and then the best thing to do is pass that on. So one of my young ones that was in the vessel with me, in the rib, the ASCS, she was actually going to be endorsed for the ship. So she had a ticket to drive, but I needed to have her endorsed to how to come alongside the ship and stuff to that specific platform. So that was good that she was actually in the boat. So then she gets that experience. So her career continuing forward, she gets to go, oh, okay, I've been in this sort of situation and has that feel, and then it won't be as harsh on her.
Because at that stage, were you past your days as a coxswain and you were just stepping into that role because she hadn't yet been endorsed?
Yes, pretty much. So that's all the training side of it, is leading hands and able rates usually drive the ribs. Then the petty officers would be facilitating the hoisting and lowering and sending it away. But then since they're still under sort of training to get endorsement, me or one of the other POs had to step in and drive the rip.
Going back to that moment, your fellow crew back on Te Mana were no doubt very anxious as they watched you guys in the rib. Have you heard what it was like for them at that time?
A lot of stories were being said when I walked through the ship, just like asking how, oh, what was it like? Like, you know, or like different people would be like, oh, that would have been cool. And then some people were like, geez, that would have been scary. And then so there's a lot of different way people view it. So a few of them were saying that they were watching on the top light, which is a camera. And then because of the rough conditions, people weren't allowed up on the upper decks. So they had to stay inside the ship. But they were looking on the camera and seeing the rib driving through. And then they were going, fire. And then we just wouldn't see for like a minute or so. And we're like, oh, like, where is he? And then we'll see the rib pop back up. And then I was like, oh, okay. Da-da. So it was, yeah. Also as well, up on the bridge at the time. So CO and everyone was up on there. And one of the officers that was up there told me what it was like, because the captain told her you ought to keep eyes on that rib. Don't lose sight of it. She was freaking out a little bit because she wouldn't see the rib for a bit. And then she was like, oh, no, where are they? And then, oh, I'm not there. Yeah, she said that pretty much you could hear a pin drop in the bridge, like of the everyone just in the zone.
Going back to, I guess, your perspective, being in the thick of it, how long did it take you to battle through to the boatie, and how was he when you eventually got there?
For me, I had no sense of time. Like, it was just get to him, get us back. So once we got to the yacht, I wasn't in a position where I wanted to be. The swell was coming from, say, in front of the yacht. And then I wanted to be behind the yacht and the waves, but just the way that the ocean was, I ended up being in front of it. So then I was facing the swells coming through, but then slowly trying to just navigate over them and drift back closer to the yacht. At that stage, I'm not facing them, so I can't see them. And then my crew, obviously, we were watching, and then they started yelling out, oh, he's in the water, he's in the water. And I was like, yeah, roger that. Keep eyes on him, because I was just still trying to make sure I'm watching these waves roll through. And then pretty much went to one of the divers, one of the senior divers that was on there. I was like, oh, bro, because obviously he's my friend. So I was like, bro, you might have to get in, jump in and go swim over and grab him and pull him away from the yacht. And then I'll come in and grab his, just because if I was going to get close, then one of the waves could just pick me up and throw me onto the yacht. He was good to go without hesitation. He pretty much just started getting on his fins. He was like, yeah, yeah, sweet. Get his fins and goggles on, ready to go. But then, yeah, the ocean being the ocean, unpredictable, just picked me up pretty much and just pushed or forced me into going down towards where he was. So then I saw that happening. So I was just like, told my crew, I was like, stand by, grab him, pick him up. And then we were just going in, pretty much going to go over to him. And then they just ripped him out, started ripping him out, pulling him out, because the wave that was pushing me, I obviously had to try to get over that. So then I turned to the right and then put my throttle full on to try to get up over the wave. And whilst they're trying to rip him in, and then, yeah, it was just up over the wave, airborne a bit. Yes, I don't think the ride might have been that great for him, but yeah, it was certainly pretty crazy.
Did you have any chance to register in that moment relief at getting him on board?
No, well, because for me, is I already had people on board that I was looking after, so I feel like the rescue has already started when I left, because I already had the people and I put them into that environment. So I was like, I'm already rescuing my own crew, like, you know, trying to get ourselves back, but then going and grabbing him and then coming back, it still felt like the whole thing was a pretty hairy moment.
Yeah, I imagine the return back to Te Mana was just as treacherous by the sounds of it.
It was pretty much exactly the same, trying to make our way back. A few waves there, it was like full throttle, trying to get up over, and then just going backwards with the wave. So it's like you can probably picture how fast they're rolling through, and then I'm trying to go full tilt and go up and trying to get over and going backwards. I was just like, whoa, like, this is crazy. And then getting over it, because then there's such strong wind, you don't want to get airborne and then the wind picks you up and flips you. So pretty much I was doing that, trying to get back. We nearly flipped over about three times from memory, like just from going up and over and then getting airborne. But then another wave would hit me from the side and then I'd feel the boat start to flip. So then I'd turn and then ride the wave down that was going the other way. So yeah, it was a real weird sort of situation. But then I think the ship was trying to radio me on the comms, and because I couldn't hear it with everything that was going on. And I was just like, I don't know, because I was probably freaking out or whatever. I just grabbed the comms and I was just like yelled into it. And I was like, I need shelter. And just that was it. Like, no proper comms procedures or anything like that. I just told them I need shelter from the winds, because that's what the most dangerous part when I was going over the waves was, the wind going to pick me up. So then, yeah, they positioned themselves where I could get closer in.
It's clear that you felt such a responsibility for the other people on the rib with you, your crew and the man that you rescued. Had you been in a situation like that before where I guess you felt like you had people's lives in your hands?
No, I can't say I have. That was pretty much first time, but yeah.
A pretty intense experience.
Yeah.
How did it feel once you guys got back on deck on Tamana?
Pretty much when I felt like relief was once the crane's wire hooked up into the boat. And then, because when I was coming in to make my approach to the ship, it was strange because the sea was obviously bouncing off the ship and then creating like these pyramids of water. Like, you know, when you drop a rock into water and it goes boop, then the little thing comes up. It was pretty much like that, but on a big scale in the middle of where I was trying to make my approach. As you do it, the other PO, which would have been either or me or him driving.
That's the other petty officer.
Yes. Yeah. He put his hand up, like he puts his hand up to wave me in when it's safe to come alongside. But as a driver, you could sort of see when it is safe to go through. Yeah, so I just called myself in pretty much when I saw it was safe to get in. It was good that the divers that were on board knew what to do as well with the bellman duties of the boat, so which the ASCS would have been doing. But the divers had a sense of knowledge as well into that sort of unit area. So they just grabbed those parts and started connecting the boat on and stuff like that. And once we got hooked on, then started getting hoisted up, I was just like, oh, cool. Even though we're still swinging around and everything like that, I was just like, we've got something attached. And then, yeah, started going up. Then they slew it in, so they bring the crane in. And then the boat's sort of on a like real lean because the wind and the swell, you'll still swing out. So we're like sort of standing on a 45 in the boat against the ship, like waiting to go up. Hey, was all good.
I understand at the time your partner was 5 months pregnant with your first child. Did that give you pause at the time, or were you just in full operational mode?
Yeah, so with that, I was more after the fact, because in the moment, I think I was just in the zone just to get the task done that we needed to do. Then it wasn't till later on, like sitting around with the crew and stuff on the ship, and then like I think thoughts just start going through your mind. Then obviously that sort of came into my mind and stuff, and I was like, all right, I didn't even like register it, like, because it wasn't even in my mind. And then yeah, so I think that sort of stuff sort of makes you a bit like, ooh, like should I be doing that sort of stuff? But I just think if you're going to go try help someone, then you're doing it for a cause.
Well, Leon, thank you very much for your time today and sharing that with us. We're just going to end on one final reflection. All four of you from Tamana who were on the rib were later recognised by the New Zealand Defence Force for your bravery and your skill that day. Leon, you were awarded the Defence Meritorious Service Medal. How did that make you feel, and how does that still make you feel having had that recognition?
I'm happy. To be honest, like for myself, I really don't like recognition. I just like to fly under the radar sort of thing. But I do like to see other people get it. I think that's what I like for myself, is like if other people get it, because that's one thing I said to my command when I was on there. I said, oh, I hope that my crew gets something out of this, some sort of recognition, just because, yeah. But I'm happy as that I got it. But, I get more satisfaction out of people achieving other things or being recognised. Makes me feel better.
This podcast is a production of the New Zealand Defence Force. We're your hosts, Mitchell Alexander and Alex Mason. We'd like to thank our guests for sharing their stories. If you need to talk to someone, you'll find details for support services in the show notes. We welcome your feedback on this podcast. Contact us via email, podcast@nzdf.mil.nz. Haere rā.